Chapter 22 of candidates for readers, before they are elected, and if she objects to the nomination, said candidates shall not be chosen. Is that an election by the board? Thus far I have not been able to find out what that board of specters is for. It certainly has no real function, no duty which the hired girl could not perform, no office beyond the mere recording of the autocrat's decrees. There are no dangerously long office terms in Mrs. Eddy's government. The readers are elected for but 1 year. This ensures their subserviency to their proprietor. Readers are not allowed to copy out passages and read them from the manuscript in the pulpit. They must read from Mrs. Eddy's book itself. She is right. Slight changes could be slyly made, repeated, and in time get acceptance with congregations. Branch sects could grow out of these practices. Mrs. Eddy knows the human race, and how far to trust it. Her limit is not over a quarter of an inch. It is all that a wise person will risk. Mrs. Eddy's inborn disposition to copyright everything, charter everything, secure the rightful and proper credit to herself for everything she does, and everything she thinks she does, and everything she thinks, and everything she thinks, or has thought, or intends to think, is illustrated in Sec. 5 of Art. IV. Defining the duties of official readers in church. Naming book and author. The reader of Science and Health, with key to the scriptures, before commencing to read from this book, shall distinctly announce its full title, and give the author's name. Otherwise the congregation might get the habit of forgetting who ostensibly wrote the book. The aristocracy, this consists of first members and their apostolic succession. It is a close corporation, and its membership limit is 100. 40 will answer, but if the number fall below that, there must be an election to fill the grand quorum. This Sanhedrin can't do anything of the slightest importance, but it can talk. It can discuss. That is, it can discuss important questions relative to church members, evidently persons who are already church members. This affords it amusement, and does no harm. It connects the salaries of the readers. Twice a year it votes on admitting candidates. That is, for church membership. But its work is cut out for it beforehand, by Art. X. : Every recommendation for membership in the church shall be countersigned by a loyal student of Mrs. Eddy's, by a director of this church, or by a first member. Apostrophe, all these three classes of beings are the personal property of Mrs. Eddy. As he has absolute control of the elections. Also it must ransack any church business that may properly come before it. Properly is a thoughtful word. No important business can come before it. The bylaws have attended to that. No important business goes before anyone for the final word except Mrs. Eddy. As he has looked to that. The Sanhedrin notes on candidates for admission to its own body. But is its vote worth any more than mine would be? No, it isn't. Sec. 4 of Art. 5. Election of first members makes this quite plain. Before being elected, the candidates for first members shall be approved by the pastor emeritus over her own signature. Thus the Sanhedrin is the personal property of Mrs. Eddy. She owns it. It has no functions, no authority, no real existence. It is another board of shadows. Mrs. Eddy is the Sanhedrin herself. But it is time to foot up again, and see where we are at. Thus far, Mrs. Eddy is the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, Pastor Emeritus, President, Board of Directors, Treasurer, Clerk, Future Board of Trustees, Proprietor of the Priesthood, Dictator of the Services, Proprietor of the Sanhedrin. As he has come far, and is still on her way. Church membership, in this article there is another exhibition of a couple of the large features of Mrs. Eddy's remarkable makeup. Her business talent and her knowledge of human nature. She does not beseech and implore people to join her church. She knows the human race better than that. She gravely goes through the motions of reluctantly granting admission to the applicant as a favor to him. The idea is worth untold shekels. She does not stand at the gate of the fold with welcoming arms spread, and receive the lost sheep with glad emotion and set up the fatted calf and invite the neighbor, and have a time. No, she looks upon him coldly, she snubs him, she says, "Who are you? Who is your sponsor? Who asked you to come here? Go away, and don't come again until you are invited." It is calculated to strikingly impress a person accustomed to Moody and Sankey and Sam Jones revivals, accustomed to brain-turning appeals to the unknown, and an endorsed sinner to come forward and enter into the joy, etc. Just as he is, accustomed to seeing him do it, accustomed to seeing him pass up the aisle through sobbing seas of welcome, and love, and congratulation, and arrive at the mourner's bench, and be received like a long-lost government bond. No, there is nothing of that kind in Mrs. Eddy's system. She knows that, if you wish to confer upon a human being something which he is not sure he wants, the best way is to make it apparently difficult for him to get it. Then he is no son of Adam, if that apple does not assume an interest in his eyes which it lacked before. In time this interest can grow into desire. Mrs. Eddy knows that, when you cannot get a man to try free of cost a new and effective remedy for a disease he is afflicted with, you can generally sell it to him, if he will put a price upon it which he cannot afford. When, in the beginning, she taught Christian Science gratis for good reasons, pupils were few and reluctant, and required persuasion. It was when she raised the limit to $300 for a dollar's worth, that she could not find standing room for the invasion of pupils that followed. With fine astuteness she goes through the motions of making it difficult to get membership in her church. There is a twofold value in this system. It gives membership a high value in the eyes of the applicant, and at the same time the requirements exacted enable Mrs. Eddy to keep him out, if he has doubts about his value to her. A word further, as to applications for membership. Applications of students of the Metaphysical College must be signed by the Board of Directors. That is safe. Mrs. Eddy is proprietor of that board. Children of 12 may be admitted, if invited by any of Mrs. Eddy's loyal students, or by a first member, or by a director. These sponsors are the property of Mrs. Eddy, therefore her church is safeguarded from the intrusion of undesirable children. Other students. Applicants who have not studied with Mrs. Eddy can get in only by invitation and recommendation from students of Mrs. Eddy, or from members of the Mother Church. Other paragraphs explain how two or three other varieties of applicants are to be challenged and obstructed, and tell us who is authorized to invite them, recommend them, endorse them, and all that. The safeguards are definite, and would seem to be sufficiently strenuous to Mr. Sam Jones, at any rate. Not for Mrs. Eddy. She adds this clincher. The candidates be elected by a majority vote of the first members present. That is the aristocracy, the aborigines, the Sanhedrin. It is Mrs. Eddy's property. She herself is the Sanhedrin. No one can get into the church, if she wishes to keep him out. This veto power could some time, or other have a large value for her, therefore she was wise to reserve it. It is likely, that it is not frequently used. It is also probable that the difficulties attendant upon getting admission to membership have been instituted more to invite than to deter, more to enhance the value of membership and make people long for it than to make it really difficult to get. I think so, because the Mother Church has many thousands of members more than its building can accommodate. And some English required, Mrs. Eddy is very particular as regards one detail, curiously so, for her, all things considered. The church readers must be good English scholars. They must be thorough English scholars. She is thus sensitive about the English of her subordinates for cause, possibly. In her chapter defining the duties of the clerk, there is an indication that she harbors resentful memories of an occasion when the hazy quality of her own English made unforeseen and mortifying trouble. Understanding communications. Sec. 2. If the clerk of this church shall receive a communication from the pastor emeritus which he does not fully understand, he shall inform her of this fact before presenting it to the church, and obtain a clear understanding of the matter, then act in accordance therewith. She should have waited to calm down then, but instead she added this, which lacks sugar. Failing to adhere to this bylaw, the clerk must resign. I wish I could see that communication that broke the camel's back. It was probably the one beginning colon what plague spotter bacilli were gnawing at the heart of this metropolis and bringing it on bended knee. And I think it likely that the kindly disposed clerk tried to translate it into English and lost his mind and had to go to the hospital. That bylaw was not the offspring of a forecast, an intuition. It was certainly born of a sorrowful experience. Its temper gives the fact away. The little book of bylaws has manifestly been tinkered by one of Mrs. Eddy's Horo English scholars, for in the majority of cases its meanings are clear. The book is not even marred by Mrs. Eddy's peculiar specialty lumbering clumsinesses of speech. I believe the salaried polisher has weeded them all out but one. In one place, after referring to science and health, Mrs. Eddy goes on to say the Bible and the above -named book, with other works by the same author, etc. It is an unfortunate sentence, for it could mislead a hasty or careless reader for a moment. Mrs. Eddy framed it, it is her very own, it bears her trademark. The Bible and science and health, with other works by the same author, could have come from no literary vacuum, but the one which produced the remark in the autobiography, I remember reading, in my childhood, certain manuscripts containing scriptural sonnets, besides other verses and enigmas. We know what she means, in both instances, but a low-priced clerk would not necessarily know, and on a salary like his he could quite excusably aver that the pastor emeritus had commanded him to come and make proclamation that she was author of the Bible, and that she was thinking of discharging some scriptural sonnets and other enigmas upon the congregation. It could lose him his place, but it would not be fair if it happened before the edict about understanding communications was promulgated. Readers, again, the bylaw book makes a showy pretense of orderliness and system, but it is only a pretense. I will not go so far as to say it is a harum-scarum jumble, for it is not that, but I think it fair to say it is at least jumbulacious in places. For instance, Articles 3 and 4 set forth in much detail the qualifications and duties of readers. She then skips some 30 pages and takes up the subject again. It looks like slovenliness, but it may be only art. The belated bylaw has a sufficiently quiet look, but it has a ton of dynamite in it. It makes all the Christian Science Church readers on the globe the personal chattels of Mrs. Eddy. Whenever she chooses, she can stretch her long arm around the world's fat belly and flirt a reader out of his pulpit, though he be tucked away in seeming safety and obscurity in a lost village in the middle of China. In any church. Sec. 2. The pastor emeritus of the mother church shall have the right, through a letter addressed to the individual and church of which he is the reader, to remove a reader from this office in any church of Christ, Scientist, both in America and in foreign nations, or to appoint the reader to fill any office belonging to the Christian Science denomination. She does not have to prefer charges against him. She does not have to find him lazy, careless, incompetent, untidy, ill-mannered, unholy, dishonest. She does not have to discover a fault of any kind in him. She does not have to tell him nor his congregation why she dismisses and disgraces him and insults his meek flock. She does not have to explain to his family why she takes the bread out of their mouths and turns them out of doors homeless and ashamed in a strange land. She does not have to do anything but send a letter, and say colon pack, and ask no questions. Has the Pope this power? The other Pope, the one in Rome, has he anything approaching it? Can he turn a priest out of his pulpit, and strip him of his office, and his livelihood just upon a whim, a caprice, and meanwhile furnishing no reasons to the parish? Not in America, and not elsewhere, we may believe. It is odd and strange to see intelligent and educated people among us worshipping this self-seeking and remorseless tyrant as a god. This worship is denied by persons who are themselves worshippers of Mrs. Eddy. I feel quite sure that it is a worship which will continue during ages. That Mrs. Eddy wrote that amazing bylaw with her own hand, we have much better evidence than her word. We have her English. It is there. It cannot be imitated. She ought never to go to the expense of copyrighting her verbal discharges. When anyone tries to claim them, she should call me. I can always tell them from any other literary apprentices at a glance. It was like her to call America a nation. She would call a sandbar a nation, if it should fall into a sentence in which she was speaking of peoples, for she would not know how to untangle it, and get it out, and classify it by itself. And the closing arrangement of that bylaw is in true Edisonian form too, in that she reserves authority to make a reader fill any office connected with a science church sexton, grave digger, advertising agent, annex polisher, leader of the choir, president, director, treasurer, clerk, etc. She did not mean that. She. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.